This is Sports Sunday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Easing our way into hour number two here on Sports Sunday. Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. I toss and turn, I'm your host, Brad Porter. The talented Jed Marshall is producing. Set us up for a nice show today. We talked with David Leskey in the last hour about Royals baseball. Danny Duffy leaving his last spring training start early yesterday. Concerns about whether or not he will make the home opening start Thursday. He doesn't think so? Question mark? But hopefully some more information coming out today. Coming up at 10:25, Tim Fitzgerald from GoPowerCat.com will join us and give us the other side of the Loyola Chicago K-State story, primarily the K-State story, not going to the Final Four, but still a great season for the Wildcats, and they got everybody coming back. Everybody coming back. K-State. At 11 o'clock, Andy Edwards from NBCSports.com will join us, talk Sporting KC. They were down 2-0 on the road against Colorado last night. Nate Buchady with the call on Fox Sports Midwest and ESPN Kansas City. And Sporting found a way to pull two goals back, including one right at the death, to steal a point, which is always important in Major League Soccer. So he'll join us at 11. Then at 11:30, Danny Klinkscale, who's been doing a terrific job all week long covering the Jayhawks in Omaha, covering the whole tournament in Omaha. He's going to join us around 11:30 and get us set for Kansas and Duke. Then at noon, Westwood One's NCAA tournament coverage takes over. At 1:20, Texas Tech and Villanova, right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. And then that game will flip to ESPN Kansas City as soon as the KU-IMG Sports Network takes over with their pregame coverage at 2:30, right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, and then KU and Duke at 4 o'clock. So got the whole plate set up for you. One of the things that popped up in my Twitter timeline this morning, which actually I liked because I kind of mentioned all the negativity out there with news and politics. It drags you down. It's insufferable at times, and everybody's got an opinion about everything, and sometimes I just don't care. There's a good account I follow that I think is always interesting, Old School 80s. And the one that popped up today made me feel really good. On this day, March 25th, 1983, The Outsiders was released in theaters. And I read the book, The Outsiders. I saw the movie, The Outsiders. And last year, my oldest son, for his school assignment, read The Outsiders. And then they watched the movie. And when you can share a classic book, and it doesn't matter if The Outsiders, this week, my oldest was studying All Quiet on the Western Front, a book that takes place during World War I. And then I got to go on a tour with him and his class at the World War I Museum in Kansas City. Please go see it if you haven't. Even if you have, go see it again. There's always something new and interesting, and you can't possibly read everything in there in one day. It's a 2- and 3-day thing. But back to The Outsiders, when you can share a classic book like that with your kids and they like it as much as you did, it's always a great thing. And my oldest son had his assignment after reading The Outsiders was write the next chapter. What would the next chapter look like? And look, we all like to brag about our kids. My son wrote the next chapter. What would the next chapter of The Outsiders look like? If S.C. Hinton had written the next chapter, what would it say? And so I thought he'd put in the right amount of effort, and then I read it and I was blown away. I was like, this is legitimate. This could be the next chapter of The Outsiders. So on this date in 1983, the movie The Outsiders came out. And you want to talk about one of the all-time great casts in movie history. I was going through it. C. Thomas Howell, Ponyboy, Matt Dillon as Dallas, Ralph Macchio as Johnny, Patrick Swayze, Daryl, Rob Lowe, Soda Pop, Emilio Estevez as 2-Bit, Tom Cruise as Steve Randall. Tom Cruise just kind of randomly in that movie, eating chocolate cake while everybody's laughing about a fight they just had. It was weird, but he's kind of a weird dude. Diane Lane was in that movie. Forgotten about that. And then you get down to some of the people you forget about, like Tom Waits was in the movie. Sofia Coppola was just a little girl in that movie. You can guess why she was in it. And then there was a couple of other strange names. Flea from Red Hot Chili Peppers was in the movie. He was one of the Sochas Forgotten that. Flea was in the movie. Cam Neely, the hockey player, played for the Boston Bruins for like 25 years, was in the movie. So, just to kind of go off the beaten path, I get inspired sometimes by Joshua Briscoe because he'll go off on these rants that have nothing to do with sports, and I read that about The Outsiders coming out. So I got excited. I'm gonna see if I can watch that today. So we got a call off the air. Jed Marshall got a call and said, hey, what do you think about Chris Webber broadcasting during the NCAA tournament? And he was on that Michigan-Florida State game last night. I like Chris Webber. Do I think he's great? No. Do I think he's really good? Yeah. I mean, he can be a guy. And when you listen to former players like Reggie Miller, I don't know, Jed, what you think. You're as much of a fan as I am. Reggie Miller doesn't – I just – grates on me a little bit. And it's preference. I'm not saying he's bad. It's personal preference. Reggie Miller gets on my nerves.
I like Reggie Miller. Maybe yeah. It's because he's paired up with Kevin Harlan.
That and – yeah, yeah.
So it's hard.
Kevin is the best.
Agreed.
The best.
Kevin is the best. So it's hard for me to separate how good Harlan is. And I think maybe the reason I think Reggie Miller is a little bit, I don't know, more tolerable than you would be because Kevin, almost like the Ernie Johnson factor, Reggie Miller's a big personality, so he lets him do his thing.
Right.
And he knows when to get in and pick his spots.
Right. And if I were a television executive, one, I'd have a job in television still. Self-deprecating humor, line two. Were I an executive, Kevin Harlan would be my number one play-by-play guy in any sport. College basketball, NBA, NFL. Kevin Harlan is my number one. But networks have to, much like sports teams themselves, they have to put their highest paid guy on the biggest game. And that's Jim Nantz. Nothing against Jim Nantz. I'm just saying Kevin Harlan's the best. That's all I'm saying. It's not a slight. Jim Nantz does every major event at CBS. So the Masters and golf.
Jim Nantz is great at the Masters. He has the pacing for that. And
yes,
I think he.
Perfect.
I think that's actually what he enjoys the most. Talking
perfect.
About Harlan, I think where he really is at his best, he's great at everything. I think he does a great job in the NFL. I think he does a great job in college basketball. I think he actually likes the NBA the best, which is where he really excels.
Was his first job, right, with the Kansas City Kings. He was like 21 years old, and he was at KU.
Maybe.
And he got hired by the Kansas City Kings.
I wouldn't doubt it. I know that back in the day, he used to call, the Timberwolves games and stuff like that. But the guy who I think kind of stinks and it got paired up with Jim Nantz is Grant Hill. So boring.
He's a little dry.
And
he could use an
it's great that they have
infusion
him with,
of energy.
They have him with Rafferty, so it, right there you have, with onions and take it to the rack, young fella. He's great, but Grant Hill is so bland and dry.
Right.
Maybe I have my Jayhawk glasses on, so I'm looking for reasons to nitpick Duke, and I'm like, that Grant Hill, he sucks. I don't know. That's a completely realistic idea, but
I enjoy most. I think most of the broadcasters are pretty good. You get weeded out quickly in this business if you're not very good. I remember years and years ago, one of the NFL pregame shows tried to use Dwight Clark from the 49ers in studio, and then they tried to use Joe Montana. And Joe Montana was a complete disaster on the air because Joe Montana is good at being at two things in life that I know of. He's good at two things. He's good at being a quarterback, was good at being a quarterback, one of the best ever, and he's good at being Joe Montana. And you kind of have to maybe read between the lines a little bit. He gets by on his name. And that's fine. Look, if I win four Super Bowls, I'm not doing a darn thing the rest of my life other than cashing checks and doing commercials for, the step-ups, those tennis shoes that he does the commercials for. I think they're Skechers, but they're like the step-ups are for...
Old people, Brad?
People?
You can say it. It's all right, man. We have a much more free reign here when I'm running the board. It's a lot more like Jake Gutierrez. You can say old people. It's all right.
Joe Montana was good at throwing a football, being a quarterback, and now he's good at being Joe Montana. And that he doesn't exert too much energy at doing anything. His commercials for it, he's got
He was in those Papa John's commercials where you could tell that he was clearly green screened in and was extremely awkward.
He doesn't even
acting brilliant.
Here's the thing: if you put in half the effort, you'll continue to, and he still continues to get endorsements. Put in half the effort on memorizing a couple of lines from your script.
Don't even need to.
He does. He's clearly glancing off the screen at a cue card. Like, I'll just make up a random product. I really like this cell phone that this company gave me to talk about. It's where Peyton Manning puts in the effort. Peyton Manning sells it. Whatever it is, Peyton Manning is selling it. He's put his name on it. And he puts in the effort. Come on, Joe Montana. A little effort, Joe. A little effort. That's all you're cashing six-figure checks for crying out loud. A little effort. But back to the broadcasters, and I was thinking about this. You mentioned Bill Raftery. I love Raftery. The Onions, sending in Jerome. And now there's T-shirts. There's a company that's put T-shirts out because somebody suggested to Raftery that he come up with a line of T-shirts, and I think – I don't know if he sold the rights or he's getting a fee for it, but you can buy shirts that say Onions or Send It In Jerome or whatever. Raftery, I love. He's energetic and he loves the game. There is a divisive broadcaster in basketball, Dick Vitale. It's kind of a love-hate thing with Dick Vitale. He's over the top. It's diaper dandy this. It's diaper dandy that. It's, oh, baby, you know, on and on and on. So, yes. It is over the top. But I think Dick Vitale is genuine in his love of college basketball and his love for the sport. He loves to be around the sport. He loves being around the coaches. He loves being around the kids. I think he's genuine in his enthusiasm. And that's where he gets a pass in my book. As I've interviewed Dick Vitale a couple of times, probably three times over the years, the first thing he always does is he messes up my hair. Because I have, when I'm not wearing a ball cap, I got a pretty good head of lettuce. All right. I was, you know, TV for 20 years. You kind of have to have a good head of hair. And I do. Okay. It's a little grayer than it used to be. That's all right. So Dick Vitale messed up my hair at least two or three times. He goes, if I had your hair, I'd be a millionaire, baby. And I said, Dick, you are a millionaire, baby. You're a millionaire several times over. I am not. I would like to be the millionaire, but my name is not Dick Vitale. My name is Brad Porter. But he's been awesome every time I've had to deal with him. And one time I felt bad for him. He was in town to do a KU game, and he was speaking. I think he was speaking maybe at the Fellowship of Christian Athletes. There was a group in town he was speaking to, and he was promoting a book. And his publicist called me and said, hey, can you interview Dick Vitale at his hotel? And I said, sure, we'll set up a camera in the lobby. You tell me what time to be there, and I'll be there. And they said, can you be there at 8:30 in the morning? He's got to get to these speaking engagements. And I said, absolutely, I'll be there at 7:30. We'll be there early, we'll set up, we'll get our lights ready, good to go. Get there at 7:30, set up, wait around, it's 8:30, it's 8:45, it's 9 o'clock. And I'm like, I don't know what to do here. I don't know if he's coming. I can't leave because I promised I would be here. So I called his publicist. I called Dick Vitale's publicist, and I said, hey, you know, you said you wanted Dick Vitale to do this interview at 8:30. It's like 9:15 now. What should I do? I mean, if he's already gone, that's fine. We'll strike the gear and we'll take off. She said, no, he's in his hotel room still. Why don't you go knock on his door? And I was like, okay, this is a bad idea. You want me to go knock on the hotel room door of Dick Vitale? She said, yeah. And I said, I have your permission to do this. She said, yes. He'll be expecting you. I said, okay. So I knocked on his door, came to the door, suit and tie, nicely pressed. Looked like he'd had about 3 hours of sleep because I think he'd gotten in really late from whatever town he was coming from. Got in really late, looked super tired. And I said, Mr. Vitale. And he said, yeah, call me Dick Vitale. I said, Dick, I didn't want to knock on your door, but I was concerned because we were supposed to do this interview like 45 minutes ago. I apologize. I got in late. So I'm running a little bit behind. I'm just finishing my coffee. I'll grab my jacket and I'll be down. Grabs his jacket, go downstairs. I'm sure this is an incredibly interesting story. But he comes downstairs, got his coffee. His eyes are still kind of half closed. We turn on the lights, turn on the camera, hit record. And again, he's super tired. Said, first of all, Dick Vitale, thanks for talking to us. I know you're in town, probably going to the KU game. You got a book. Hey, baby, is awesome, baby. I wish I had a... And he just flipped the switch like that. And it was terrific. I've enjoyed every experience I've had with Dick Vitale. He takes pictures with everybody. Whenever I see him in Lawrence, like during timeouts, he's taking pictures with people, taking selfies.
He's a great ambassador for the game.
He is.
The problem with Dick Vitale is that he's such a homer for college basketball. Everybody needs to stay. Oh, this guy's averaging 40 points. He's not ready for the NBA. No, dude, he's ripping down 20 rebounds a year. He's dropping 40 points. He's going to be good in the NBA. Some people are good enough to go. Not everybody right. needs to stay 4 years. Oh, come back, Grayson Allen. You love it. Get it out.
Yeah.
It's a little much. I love Dick Vitale and all he does for college basketball, yeah. but
I give a guy a pass if he really loves what he's doing and he's genuine about it. He really loves what he does.
Sure.
He's not an actor.
No, he's not. And there's something to be said, and you do get a pass when you reach such an iconic level. Like people,
right.
Harry Carey became a caricature of himself, and Will Ferrell did the most priceless
yes.
Harry Carey of all time. But Harry Carey was a damn fine broadcaster.
Yeah.
Dick Vitale, I don't think, was ever the fine broadcaster and color guy. He was always more of a rah-rah guy. Great ambassador.
And that's fine, yeah.
But I think that's all he really is.
I'll tell you who I would rather watch 100 games of Dick Vitale calling a game over one game of Billy Packer. One of the most miserable broadcasters I've met. And that's just, I don't say negative things about other broadcasters very often because I like most of the people in this business. We're all there because we love sports. Billy Packer's a miserable human being. And where it sealed the deal for me, I was going to cut him a pass because I've heard stories about what happens, how he treats the people. When media people come to a game, you have to show them your media pass and all that. And he did not treat those people very well. He was very condescending.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard that from a number of people. The one that permanently switched me off was it maybe about 10 years ago, there were four teams from the Missouri Valley that made the NCAA tournament. And it was stunning that they got four teams into the NCAA tournament. And I don't remember which teams it was at the time, but four teams from the Missouri Valley made the tournament. And they go on the selection show, and Billy Packer's, this is embarrassing for college basketball. How dare Missouri Valley, this small, know-nothing conference, get four teams into the tournament when this team that finished ninth in the Big East couldn't get in? How dare four teams from the Mo Valley get in? Guess who's got a team in the Final Four this year? The Missouri Valley. Loyola Chicago. So Billy Packer, it's better that he's not doing games.
I think Billy Packer actually was pretty good because he looked at basketball with a critical eye.
He was good
eye.
At what he did. I just didn't
not,
like him personally.
He wasn't a fanboy. He didn't just, not everything was great, Brad. He actually would be like, wow, that guy took a really bad shot. That was a bad offensive possession. Sometimes the life isn't all puppies and rainbows.
Right. I get it.
I'm bringing
he's a
the realness. I'm
he's
bringing
a
the realness to Sports Sunday.
How about he was a pragmatist?
Fair enough.
Okay.
Me and Billy Packard are one and the same. I seem all cheery.
Well, I'm not talking to you again anymore.
Good.
I'm just kidding. But you're actually nice to people. Billy Packard wasn't all that nice. So, college basketball, in a few minutes, we're going to have Tim Fitzgerald from GoPowerCat.com come on, talk about K-State and their loss to Loyola Chicago. And as I said kind of in the opening of the show, I was good with whoever won the game because you had four kids from Kansas City in that game, two for K-State, two for Loyola Chicago. K-State's a Big 12 team, so if K-State had won, you'd get a team from the Big 12 plus two kids from Kansas City getting to move on. Loyola Chicago, also two kids, two starters from Kansas City from Blue Valley Northwest High School, Clayton Custer, Ben Richardson. Ben Richardson was the MVP on the South Region team, career high 23 points, and it's a great story. Loyola going to the Final Four. And no one will pick them to win. They'll be the underdog in how many, if they play one or two more games, they'll be the underdog in both games. I believe by a significant margin against Michigan. I haven't seen the number yet. I'm going to guess they'll be a -5 at least against Michigan. That's a stab. I'll guess they'll be -4, -5 coming out of the box. And I'll have to look it up. But, Jed Marshall is looking. I'm going to guess they're going to come out of the box as a -4 or -5 to Michigan. And that's not an accurate prediction of how the game's going to unfold. But you see how those lines move. And last night in that Michigan Florida State game. I believe the line was 4.5, and it was a 4-point differential. There were people in Las Vegas having heart attacks last night, or people outside of Vegas who may put a sawbuck on a game that's not legal. But I'm going to guess Loyola comes out as a -4 or -5.
Michigan is favored. They're -5.5 right now.
-5. And I meant to say Michigan. I was going to say Loyola would be a +4 or +5, but it's Michigan at
-5.5.
-5.5.
And that's obviously early. A lot can change between now and then. That seems about right, though.
The Michigan fans out in Vegas will probably...
There are also 800,000 Michigan fans and alumni and people like me who literally have no ties to the school, but
who
buy their gear
the
and have a more than a rooting interest occasionally.
As Seren Petros says, more than a rooting interest. It's all right. All right, so we have Tim Fitzgerald coming up from GoPowerCat.com at 11 o'clock. Andy Edwards from NBCSports.com talking about Sporting KC down 2-0, coming back to get a tie on the road against Colorado. And Danny Klinkscale at 11:30 live from Omaha, who's going to set up Kansas and Duke. And you can hear all of the NCAA tournament coverage beginning at noon right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, which is the number one spot for tournament coverage. All right, coming up next, Tim Fitzgerald, as we broadcast Sports Sunday live from the Rally House Studios. My name is Brad Porter. You're listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Sunday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Some people may not like this song because a few years ago it was the song of the summer, and then the singer had to pay off the artist who actually wrote the hook for this song. I don't remember how that whole lawsuit went down. It was the Thick kid. What's his name? Alan Thick's son.
Robin
Thick. The hook goes back to a song from, I believe, the 70s, maybe the 80s. It's like a Motown hook. And if you play them both, it's clearly ripped off. And so they had to give up almost all the money they made from this, which was several million dollars. The family sued. So was it... I'd have to look up the lawsuit and see who sued who and who won what, but I still like the song, despite all that. I like the song. It's catchy. All right. Robin Thicke bringing us back. Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. I am your host, Brad Porter. It might be a little dark. It might be a little dreary. It might be a little bit cold, but we're having fun. We talk sports for a living, for crying out loud. It's fun. Last night wasn't that much fun for K-State basketball or their fans. And Tim Fitzgerald, who writes for GoPowerCat.com, follow him on Twitter, @LifeOfFitz, has been in Atlanta all week this week covering the K-State Wildcats. Fitz, first of all, broad strokes on this game before we drill down into it. I mean, this was the wrong night to face a team that couldn't miss a shot while your team couldn't make a shot, while K-State couldn't make a shot. It was a perfect storm of college basketball that sees an 11 seed go to the Final Four.
Yeah, and I'm here to report that Loyola is legit. I mean, that is a tightly put together team. They probably shouldn't have been 11 seed, but, you know, you come out of the Valley, mostly unknown still. Without Wichita State, people kind of ignored the Valley. Well, this is a very Wichita State-like team, so they're legitimate. They belong there. They can get it done. I think they're going to beat Michigan if they play anywhere close to what they did against Kansas State. But so credit them, but let's be realistic. Kansas State didn't come out of the gates with the same focus and lockdown defense that the Wildcats have shown, and it kind of helped Loyola get into a rhythm, and it set the tone for tonight.
Well, I heard Bruce Weber's comments before the game, and they kind of revisited the Kentucky game, and why not? It was a fantastic story for Kansas State. And he said one of the keys to the Kentucky game is we came out hot in a hurry. We had to set the tone and kind of punch him in the mouth a little bit and let him know that we're here to play. And they did the same thing on the defensive end. And in the game against Loyola Chicago, completely different start to the game. It looked like K-State a little bit deer in the headlights. I don't know if it was the moment of the Elite Eight or if they were stunned by Loyola's shooting ability. I don't know, but completely different starts to the game.
Yeah, well, it struck me that it was just the mirror image of the Kentucky game. Kansas State was on the taking end of that. And unfortunately for the Wildcats, they didn't have the athletic tools to make things up like Kentucky did against them. You know, we want to talk about how well Loyola shot the ball. They defended tremendously well. They just took away a lot of things that Kansas State wanted to do. And on top of that, they just weren't shooting the ball very well. But you can – what if Dean Wade had played all you want? You know, I'm not sure anything was going to overcome that shooting night by Loyola. But, you know, I keep coming back to this, that, you know, Kansas State just went on a run through the NCAA tournament to the Elite Eight without Dean Wade. So it's been pretty remarkable.
And look, K-State fans, I'm a fan of all of our local teams in the Big 12, and I think this is a great run, and I'm happy they made it this far. I think it's a good storyline. So, again, before we drill down into it, the broad picture, I think this is great for Bruce Weber and K-State and his program. He's going to have everybody coming back next year off an Elite Eight season. This is for a team that was picked to finish eighth in the Big 12, I think this is a tremendously successful campaign and NCAA tournament for K-State.
I had a schedule. I mean, we talked about a Sweet 16 for this group, but it was for next season.
We
thought that this team could be really good next year and make a run through the tournament. Then this season was about getting through the first round, and then you're probably going to play Virginia, and in all likelihood your season would end. But fortune held something different for this team. They didn't get Virginia. They got UMBC. People wanted to dismiss that, and then they proved that wrong by going ahead and beating Kentucky in the Sweet 16 and a really valiant effort. So this was way ahead of schedule for K-State. This was a big-time run for them and gives them, these Wildcats, a lot of momentum going into this offseason. And like you said, everyone should be back off this team. There's not a single senior on this roster that's on scholarship. And you add in a few more pieces with, you know, I'm sure there'll be a couple departures from down in the you know, roster a little bit, but you add some more pieces in. Who knows where this team can go? But what did we learn from the tournament this year? It doesn't really matter what your seeding is. It doesn't really matter what you did during the regular season.
No, it's all out the window
in this event.
You mentioned about, you know, you expected to get that first win, maybe. But I didn't like the talk coming in. And look, Bruce Weber is open for criticism. He's a big boy. He makes a lot of money to coach basketball. But some of the talk going into the tournament was, well, last year's win didn't really count because it was a play-in game. So now he's got to win in the round of 64. I get that. I understand that. But it's 68 teams. He won a game last year, and now he's won three games this year. And I think if you had doubts or your line of demarcation for success was getting that first win, you got way more than what you bargained for.
No, I'm one that believes that really it counted but didn't count. I mean,
and I'm okay with that.
64 teams. It's those four games, those four teams that are added from, you know, the mid-majors essentially, or excuse me, from the major conferences essentially, are for guys just like Bruce Weber that, you know, shouldn't have made the tournament, but they did make the tournament. I don't quite understand the purpose of those four spots in the tournament, let alone the eight spots. It should be 64 teams in this play. But, again, they got through that. They answered that. And I should point out that 3 years to the day yesterday when they lost was the day that they dismissed Marcus Foster. So it was this whole tournament was kind of, you know, very karma-like. They came full circle with the dismantling of the program 3 years ago with what happened to Marcus Foster and dismissing or having transfer so many players and then basically starting over, and here they were.
Okay, in the game last night against Loyola, 78-62 the final, we're talking with Tim Fitzgerald, GoPowerCat.com. I know you tweeted during the game, Cam Stokes, who was dreadful, 1-for-6 from downtown. I was just hoping he would stop, but I guess if you're desperate, you keep shooting. 1-for-6 from downtown, 4-of-12 from the field, and you had tweeted out during the game, every Cam Stokes missed shot should count as a turnover. It was that bad, and he just kept shooting. And I guess that's a shooter's mentality, but at some point, my goodness, it's got to occur to you, this is not good.
Yeah, I think he missed his first six shots. All of his points came in the final flurry of the game when he came off the bench and, you know, started scoring again. But let's be honest, those first five shots weren't even close to making. I mean, it's not like he was getting bad luck. He was way off the mark. And a couple of them were taken when, you know, they had more offense to run. So it was very frustrating. And, you know, later on I tweeted, it's amazing how different this team is when Cam Stokes is good and when Cam Stokes is bad. Because when he came in and was good, all of a sudden everything looked right. And, you know, he's got some flaws in his game that everyone's seeing right now with dribbling the ball too much and sometimes looking for his own shot too much. But once he got going, they started to play pretty good basketball. And unfortunately, he hasn't been the same Cam Stokes since he came back from his foot injury. And honestly, you can't fault Bruce Weber for much in this postseason, but I think at times he leaned on Cam Stokes too much because he's just not at the top of his game.
Was part of that just the wild shooting, the fact that because Loyola Chicago started off so hot that K-State felt the need to start launching shots? Because it looked to me, when you watch Loyola Chicago, they ran all of their offensive sets. They were willing to make 5 to 8 to 10 passes per set to get the open shot. And K-State, very early on to me, it looked like, we're just going to start launching. We're not running our offense, which then led to 32 defensive rebounds for Loyola, because K-State was shooting so quick, their rebounders could not get in position. Ma Wayne could not get to the basket fast enough.
Yeah, it was all out of sync. You know, Loyola's offense was so impressive. They just passed and passed and passed and took apart that really good K-State defense. There was one possession in particular that sticks out to me in the first half. K-State defended for 29 seconds beautifully, perfectly. And Loyola ended up getting a kind of panicked pass back into the post that ended up into an and-one three-point play. And that kind of was symbolic of the night. Even when Kansas State did something right, it didn't quite do it right enough. And Loyola was just a much, much better basketball team in this game, and I'm not sure they aren't much, much better overall. I think this team would have played very well in the Big 12 Conference if that's what is symbolic of how they play.
You're listening to Sports Sunday on Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. I am Brad Porter. We're talking with Tim Fitzgerald from GoPowerCat.com. Please visit that site for all the great coverage from Atlanta last night and all through the tournament and all through the season, all year. It's 365 for you guys. I know that. So your takeaway after watching Loyola Chicago in person, we can see it on TV, we can look at the numbers, but you saw it in person. Certainly they're going to be an underdog. If they get to play, whether it's one more game or two more games, they're going to be the underdog. They're already +5.5 against Michigan. But as you watched them play over those couple of days, how do they stack up against teams that are going to be, that have been, bigger and more athletic? And that's not a slam against Loyola Chicago. They have good athletes and good players, but they're playing against guys that are at a different level athletically.
I would have, I'm glad Kansas State advanced in Elite Eight, but I am intrigued what would have happened if they had played Kentucky, that kind of size and athleticism. They caught a Kansas State team that they matched up well without Dean Wade, because K-State was playing four guards just like Loyola likes to do. And, you know, K-State was fortunate enough in the first two games to catch a four-guard set from both Creighton and UMBC. Now they move on to Michigan. I'll be honest, I don't know a whole lot about Wolverines. They were always playing when we were working, covering our team. And it looks like, a real opportunity, though, based on what little I've seen, for Loyola to advance, get into the finals, and the other side of the bracket will bring, you know, more of a blue blood, probably, more of a big-time power, a team that's had a lot of success this season. And it would be very, very intriguing to see what happens.
I watched Michigan last night, and it's a John Beilein team. They launch threes. They chuck a ton of them. And I think Dennis Dodd from CBSSports.com tweeted out this morning that he thought that Michigan's defense, he would call it Gumby, because they stretch and pull and push you to areas that you're not comfortable with, and they get you out of their game. And that's certainly going to be a challenge for a team like Loyola, although they worked their inside-outside game both last night. So who knows? I'm not putting anything past Loyola Chicago anymore.
Well, their young big man is really a key to that team, because they put four guys on the outside and make you defend them. You can't double down because of their three-point shooting. And that young man has a lot of finesse to his game, along with being a big hunk of man. I mean, he's
and a good passer too. He's a good passer.
Yeah, he's got really good skills. We were discussing after the game. I really hope Loyola has a good strength and conditioning program, because if they can get some muscle on him and some fat off of him, that kid's got a real good future. That's a freshman.
Yeah,
that's a big, big kid. But he's got a lot of skill set to his game, and he kind of makes it go, because he'll make you pay down in the low post if you've got to stay out there and cover all those three-point shooters. This could be a really fun game to watch, with both teams chucking up three-pointers because they both can shoot it. And the thing about Loyola is they've got a bunch of guys who can get hot, and we saw one last night from Kansas City that just lit up the Wildcats.
All right, we're talking with Tim Fitzgerald, GoPowerCat.com. He and his team have been in Atlanta and everywhere else throughout the tournament covering the Wildcats. Back to K-State, I'm not sure what the contract situation is for Bruce Weber, but we all know when you make some kind of a run that the extension is coming. Do you anticipate some sort of an extension for Bruce? I don't know what it extends to right now, but do you expect some add-on to the end of it?
You know, I think that would be premature. He just got an extension before the start of the season. I know that fans are kind of bought back into basketball under Bruce, but I think a lot of fans would kind of have a little pushback if, you know, you went and gave him another extension with another big buyout.
Or maybe a bump up?
Yeah, he might get a bump of some sort, but he just, like I said, he just signed a new contract. We'll see what Gene Taylor does, but we know they're going to be good next year, and we're looking at in two seasons another rebuild, unless they really have some, find some guys that can step up in the future. They're going to empty out the program, at least, certainly from the scoring standpoint, and they better have some guys that really up their game to become regular scorers. I think Xavier Sneed, we saw a new gear from him.
Yep.
Saw him fix his jump shot. It was radically different. He was getting a lot more air under the ball. Instead of shooting it at the rim, he was shooting it over the rim. And it was really effective. And not only was effective, he looked like the first shooter from K-State, probably since Jacob Pullen, and maybe some from Rodney Magruder, that will be able to rise up from, well beyond that three-point line and hit a shot. And if he can continue to do that, Xavier could be really special. He might really hold a big key next year along with the return of Wade and Brown.
Yeah, Xavier Sneed really came on and had a fantastic tournament. And I'm just looking at numbers from last night. He's 6 of 10 from the floor. Probably should have had more shots when, Stokes is chucking up 12 shots. It's a head shaking. Final question for you, Fitz. I'm excited about K-State basketball going into next year, as we talked about. Everybody's coming back. But do you anticipate at least Dean Wade and Barry Brown do the exploratory thing where they do the workouts for the NBA teams and get a report back? At least do that without hiring an agent?
Yeah, and I think Xavier Sneed will do it too. And Cam Stokes did it before last season, or during last season, and maybe he would do it again, just to get some notes. And who knows, maybe the NBA will say, Dean Wade, we want you now. I don't think so. I think they probably want him to ripen on the tree another year, but they might take the approach to him like a Euro player, where we're just going to grab him so we have his rights, because I think Dean Wade's future is still ahead of him. He's still got a lot of game to develop and a lot of confidence to build, and I have no doubt he's going to be an NBA player. It's just where his starting point is, whether he was going to be a first round pick in a year or a second round pick this April, or and maybe have to go to the developmental league for a year or two. But this will be interesting if they keep it together. This is going to be a really fun team to cover next year and for fans to watch. And rumor is they're talking to Wichita State about getting on the schedule finally, starting next year, and I think that would be a great move for K-State and Wichita State basketball. And I'm a proponent of eventually playing a game in Kansas City between those two programs, because I think a thriving K-State and a thriving Wichita State program playing in Sprint Center would send a real message to KU and Missouri that, the landscape's changed around here.
Plant your flag. That's always it. That's always a good thing, and I am all for that game. Any great games we can get in Kansas City, in addition to the ones we already have, I'm up for it. So, Fitz, hey, great coverage by you and your team at GoPowerCat.com. Always enjoy your stuff, and always enjoy the humor of your tweets and the passion of your tweets, and sometimes the joy, sometimes the anger. It's all good with me. I enjoy it at Life of Fitz. So, thank you very much for joining us, and Have a safe trip back home, and we'll continue to read stuff throughout the off season.
Thank you, sir. And I know a lot of our stuff's behind a paywall, but a lot of our stuff is also up for free. So fans can go over and check out our free stuff, including my column from last night and Riley Gaetz's game rewind that summed up the contest.
All good stuff. Is that Riley hacking up in the background?
No, that's Carlton.
All right.
We're worn out. We're tired. Poor Riley's been in a hotel room with me for 12 nights.
I got you.
Need counseling.
Recirculated air in hotels and airplanes. I get sick every time. All right, Fitz, hey, thank you very much. Enjoy your Sunday.
You bet.
All right, that is Tim Fitzgerald, GoPowerCat.com. He and Riley Gaetz have been on the road with the Wildcats for the NCAA tournament. And for Riley Gaetz, I believe he's a senior at K-State. He's a really good writer, but I think he's a senior. And this was supposed to be his last spring break. And K-State's run to the Elite Eight wiped out those plans. But I think he got the better experience for it. Covering a team that goes that far. Might as well go to the Final Four if you get there. But Loyola of Chicago, unbelievable. All right, we will take reset this a little bit for you here. It's college basketball all day here at Sports Radio 810 WHB for the most part. Coming up at noon, Westwood One's NCAA tournament coverage takes over. Then at 1:20, Texas Tech and Villanova, the 3 versus the 1. And then at 2:30, the KU IMG Sports Network pregame show takes over. And when that happens, you can catch the remainder of Texas Tech and Villanova on our sister station, ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM and 94.5 FM. So 2:30 for the KU pregame show, and then at 4:05, it's Kansas and Duke, the best NCAA tournament coverage on the planet, right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, we'll wrap up the hour, and then we'll move ahead and talk some Sporting KC and KU in hour number 3. You're listening to Sports Sunday. My name is Brad Porter. We're broadcasting live from the Raleigh House Studios on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Sunday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, final segment of this hour with one more still to go. Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. I'm your host, Brad Porter. Jed Marshall is our producer. So far, we've talked with David Leske from Baseball Perspectives about the Royals opening day on Thursday. Danny Duffy, still kind of a question mark after leaving his final spring training game early Saturday. Two pitches into the third inning, said he felt like he was throwing in a swimming pool. Not sure what that means, but he says he's okay. He thinks he's still going to start Thursday, but we will check. James Shields is the scheduled starter for the Chicago White Sox. We just wrapped up with Tim Fitzgerald, who has been in Atlanta all week covering the K-State Wildcats. And unfortunately, they lost to Illinois-Chicago. Unfortunately for them, but still a great story. And the two Kansas City kids, Clayton Custer and Ben Richardson, moving on to the Final Four. Unexpected. Nobody predicted it. I would be curious to see the bracket that has it. Sister Jean didn't pick him to get out of the Sweet 16. I didn't have him going that far. I think I got two teams left. I don't want to be the bracket guy, but let's say if Michigan makes a run, I'll be okay. So will Jed Marshall. He'll be okay. Coming up in the next hour, Andy Edwards from NBCSports.com will join us. Sporting KC, a match that was both disappointing and thrilling in Colorado last night. Disappointing because Sporting KC gave up 2 goals in the first 8 minutes. But, of course, that's the most dangerous lead in soccer, 2-0. Sporting rallied for 2 goals, including one late, super late, in added time, 90 minutes plus one, to get a draw and get a point on the road, which you have to get in soccer. You have to get those if you're gonna compete. So we'll talk with Andy at 11 o'clock. Then at 11:30, Danny Klinkscale joins us live from Omaha to set up Kansas and Duke. And in the remaining few minutes we have here, and Jed, you were here yesterday when we carried the press conferences for both Duke and Kansas. And the reporters always want to get the coaches and the players' perspective on how much does this mean because it's Duke and Kansas. It's the Blue Bloods. Does this make it better? Does this make it bigger? And Mike Krzyzewski's answer was, it's important to me because we're here. He doesn't care if it's Kansas. They already beat Syracuse. He wouldn't care if it was West Virginia. He wouldn't care if it was Tennessee. He wouldn't care if it was Auburn. Wouldn't care if it was Iowa, if they ever decide to get back to the tournament, that'd be awesome. UCLA, it doesn't matter to him. It matters to us who talk about it and write about it, yes.
Well, Coach K's sour. I don't know. He reminds me a little bit of Belichick. I had a buddy the other day who mentioned that Mike Krzyzewski actually resembles the Duke Blue Devil mascot. I thought that was pretty priceless.
I think I jotted down a couple of things while he was talking.
I can find some of the audio.
Coach K had some thoughtful things. He said, asked about, is it big because it's KU? And he says, well, no, it's great because Duke is involved because we're here. That's the most important thing. And he talked to us, he was asked about the pressure of getting to the Final Four because Duke has made the Final Four so many times, but they have had teams that have bowed out at this point. I think three for Duke under Krzyzewski, if I'm not mistaken. I have to look that up. But he was asked about the pressure and what happens if you don't win. And he said, and I wrote this down specifically, he said, an interesting life is better than a life full of mediocrity. If you want to be comfortable, you can go to the schools that are never expected to get to the Final Four, that don't have championship expectations. You can make really good money. You can wear really fancy suits. You can be on TV all the time. Those jobs are out there. The Duke job is different. It's like Kansas. Bill Self likes to say the Kansas math. Kansas math is different than most schools. Kansas math is you add up your Final Fours and your championships and your Big 12 titles. Not every school does that.
Kansas math is funny because some people even do that wrong.
Right. But that's what you're measured by if you're a Duke, if you're a Kansas, if you're a North Carolina. It's what you're measured by. Now, locally, the conference championships for Kansas are probably bigger than it is nationally, even though now they have the all-time record. But you're measured nationally by Final Fours and national championships. Small thing. Shaka Smart made his name by doing what? Getting to a Final Four. He never won a conference championship at VCU. I hear Nate Buchady talk about this all the time on the Border Patrol with Stephen St. John and Jake Gutierrez. When people ask, Shaka Smart, can he do it? Can he get it done at Texas? He makes a ton of money. Still hasn't, won anything of significance. And Nate will say, he didn't win anything significant at VCU other than getting to the Final Four. He didn't win a conference championship. But guess what happens when you do get to a Final Four? When you do get to a national championship? How did life change for Brad Stevens when he went to back-to-back Final Fours with Butler?
Brad Stevens is succeeding in the NBA. Way different.
But
deal.
Was he if Butler had been one and done those 2 years, would he have gotten on the radar of the Celtics? I don't know what his connections are to the NBA. Would he have been on the radar map of Danny Ainge?
Maybe he's so smart and so young.
He's
such a sharp guy.
He's brilliant. If you've ever, I've had the pleasure of having a couple of conversations with Brad Stevens over the years. Well, he comes into town when he was at Butler, he would come in for the National Basketball Coaches Association events. Brilliant. Love talking to him. Some of my favorite people I've met at that event. Mike Bray from Notre Dame. Terrific to talk to. And I had one of my worst moments of my interviewing career at that with Bill Self. Thankfully, Bill Self was nice enough to let me off the hook. A year or two after they lost to VCU, and VCU went to the Final Four. And so Brad Stevens was at this event. Bill Self was at this event. And I asked Brad Stevens, hey, you and schools like Butler getting to the Final Four, how great is that for college basketball? He said, it's fantastic. I asked Bill Self, I said, sometimes you're on the wrong end, but isn't it great to see a VCU and a Butler get to a Final Four? And he looked right at me and he goes, you had to bring up VCU. And I immediately melted down. I regretted it. I turned red. And he goes, don't worry, let you off the hook on this one. Great. That's why I love Bill Self. Could have made it bad. So take a time out. More Sports Sunday. I'm Brad Porter. You're listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Sunday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.